As you probably know by now, Milwaukee is grappling with a drinking water challenge. The city is figuring out what it will take to replace lead service lines.
For months, city leaders have said an estimated 70,000 homes have lead service lines feeding water to their homes, and young children and pregnant women are especially at risk if poisoned.
Concerns again spiked late last week when we learned the count may be over 80,000 households. As the city continues to puzzle out a replacement plan, Milwaukee Water Works Superintendent Carrie Lewis won't be here to help. Today is her last day on the job. Lewis is moving on to lead Portland, Maine's water district.
Lewis came to Milwaukee in 1995 as its first water quality manager. In the wake of the city's cryptosporidium outbreak, one which resulted in around 100 deaths and more than 400,000 illnesses. In 1997, Lewis became WaterWorks superintendent.
She sat down with Lake Effect Susan Bentz earlier this week and began by explaining how 70,000 was chosen as the number of households likely to have lead service pipes in Milwaukee.
When we were trying to communicate to non-scientists, non-engineers, what the likelihood was that they that residents could have a lead service line, the easiest thing we thought was to say, look at what the house age, because you know how old your house is. So how does your house age compare to when lead was being allowed to be used? So the most conservative thing that Milwaukee Water Works knew about the publicly owned portion of lead service lines was 1951. But there were a whole mixture of years before that, and there are houses that were built in the 20s that don't have lead service lines, and it's really a mixed bag. But initially, before we had really, really good confidence in our data, we said, let's just do the most conservative thing. Okay, so if your house was built before 1951, it is likely to have a lead service line. It's not guaranteed, but it's likely. Now, the other part that we have come to understand is that Milwaukee Water Works has very, very good records about the publicly owned portion.
And because it's its responsibility.
That's exactly it. And really, most of our motivation, honestly, was to make sure that we were billing people properly, not so much what we were actually building, but what we were billing. And the privately owned portion is the homeowner's responsibility, and it's up to them what they do there. So we can tell you really, with really, really good confidence, what material is on the publicly owned side of the service line, and whether it's lead or copper.
So you're certain, as you can be, on the city side of what is lead and what is not.
One possible little gap, and that is that we did not, The data that we're using is in our billing system. The reason that it's in our billing system is because your water charge is in part based on the size of your meter, which is in part based on the size of your service. So when we originally put those data into our billing system, we did two things. We assumed that the privately owned portion and the city-owned portion were of the same material. And then we didn't update them after that because we weren't concerned with the material. We were just concerned with the size. So there are, at this point, about 6,000 properties that we don't know if they are still served by a lead service line. They were at one point, and many of them are, there are 2,000, for instance, that we are certain are vacant lots. So a vacant lot will still be recorded in our system as having a lead service line, but clearly it's not serving anyone, and no one ever will, because we will never let anyone hook up to that lead service line again. So now we got the 6,000 down to 4,000, and of the 4,000, we have to check, are they vacant? Are they unoccupied? Is there a building there? Has it been rehabbed? Has the building been demolished? Is it in foreclosure? What are all the possible things? And the question that we're asking ourselves is there a lead service line in the ground that could deliver water to that structure at some point in the future? Many, many of them have had the lead service already replaced with copper, but we just never kept our books up to date.
So now there, you're talking about the full line or the city side?
Just the city side, because again, that's all we know about. We're quite certain that we have about 70,000 residential and about 6,000 commercial properties that have lead service lines.
So we're talking 13.
So there's 76,000 right there. And then there are 6,000 that we don't know about. for sure. The 6,000 that we don't know about would bring us up to 82,000. So that's the absolute worst case. But of that 6,000, we're almost certain that 2,000 of them are vacant lots. So really now we're down to 80,000. So it's really complicated. And I don't know why we're so fixated on what the number is, personally.
Is it perhaps because people are contemplating, okay, what is it going to take? How long will it take? What will it cost? And what is the complete picture of our challenge here?
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
At this point, what's the best judgment of what the max number of households with lead on their side of the line might be?
I cannot answer that question.
Yeah. Can you briefly, and I know this is ancient history with everything that's happened, but about a year ago, Waterworks did sampling, and that's even been written up in the Journal of American Waterworks Association, right?
Right.
So that sampling again happened because?
I'm a member of the National Drinking Water Advisory Council, and that is a group of water utility, state drinking water administrators, environmental advocacy groups, and public that is put together to advise the EPA on regulations and matters of concern to the drinking water industry. One of their major topics a couple of years ago was lead service lines and lead in water. And as I became aware through that of the new research results, I wondered if some of the things that were happening in other cities could be happening in Milwaukee's system as well. So in 2015, we talked to Mayor Barrett, and he agreed that we should go out and find out what was going on out there and be totally transparent about it. So we found some houses where the water mains were being replaced that fed those houses, and those water mains had lead service lines. The question that we were asking was, when those service lines are disturbed, is there more lead at the customer's tap than there was before they were disturbed? Now, when we did those water main replacement projects, it's a different technique than we would be using today. When we did that project, what we would do is the contractor would dig the trench in the street, put the new water main in next to it, and then take the lead service lines that connected to the original water main, sever them, add a piece of copper, and connect that to the new water main, leaving the lead service in service. So we don't do that anymore. Now the whole thing comes out. But we would get intensive sampling at those residences before, shortly after, and about a month after that work was done. And it was very clear that the samples that were collected in, there were only six homes, but we took a lot of samples. And it was clear that the day after the new service, the new water main was put into service, there was more lead at the customer's tap. Either there was more lead in each of those 12 samples that we collected, or the levels in those samples was higher than it was before. So that point, when we discussed those results with the health department and the state health and the EPA and the DNR, and we brought all that to Mayor Barrett, he said, okay, stop. Don't do any more of this work till we figure out what's going on. And that was the point at which we started to put in place public health protections for when lead services have to be disturbed because they leak. They have to be fixed. You can't just let them keep. So at that point, we developed communication materials. What do you do to protect yourself against lead in water? We give out brochures. We offer filters when we're doing work. We teach people how important it is after construction to flush your house pipes like crazy to get rid of any particulate lead that might be in there. And that was, and then Flint happened. So the awareness of lead was hugely increased everywhere.
So that was pre-Flint.
It was. Well, I mean, you could,
I mean, in terms of, you mean it hitting the,
right, the media,
the reality of what was going on there.
Right. Cause
did you internally, did people in the industry and in the council that you spoke of, did they know what was going on in Flint? I mean, were there discussions about that?
There may have been. My tenure on that advisory council started after the subgroup was looking at the lead. And by the time I arrived on the scene, that subgroup was talking about mostly Washington, D.C., because that's where...
Happened earlier.
Right. 20 years ago-ish, Washington, D.C. had a major lead disaster that somehow didn't seem to reverberate through the community as much as Flint did.
So you feel as though you did your sampling, you communicated with, I don't know which order, with the mayor's office, with the public health department, that that moved in a responsible, swift fashion?
It did. The mayor's office was right on it immediately, and the Common Council was very, very receptive and fully supportive of take whatever steps you need to do to protect people, and please communicate as much as you can what you're finding. It was this, the level of support was just fantastic.
You've already talked about the council. You're now the chair of that council.
I am the chair of that council.
When you think back before you came here, crypto was the crisis here. In terms of coming into the job, then becoming superintendent, how do you see the information sharing with public health, you know, early and consistent public education? Is that something that you think has improved here, is always in need of improvement? I mean, how would you analyze that?
One of the reasons that the crypto outbreak went undetected for as long as it did, which was only a matter of days, but I'm sure it was an eternity if you were here, was because the Water Works and the Health Department didn't really communicate at all. I mean, when I was here, the two departments, we're on the fourth floor, they're on the third floor, we were faxing each other things. Nobody thought to go down and knock, 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 hi, can we talk about this? There was no communication whatsoever. And the council did put in a resolution that required the creation of an interagency clean water advisory council back in 93. It still meets. We still do it. I've been chairing it. The new superintendent will chair it. And that's actually been held up by the EPA as a model for water security now, because that conversation, you can see disease in the community that can alert you to water. The water people can see changes in water quality that can alert you to disease. And it's a marriage made in heaven. We don't see things the same way as each other. And sometimes that's a conflicting approach, but through that exchange of ideas and understanding where that conflict is and why we see things differently, we're much better together than we are separately. So the water health relationship is key, and it's one that really needs to keep going.
So there's been a call through the Water Quality Task Force for an audit of the Milwaukee Water Works. Do you see that as positive, unnecessary? What's your thoughts?
When the conversation came up about reviewing some of Milwaukee Water Works, I mean, the Water Quality Task Force is there to talk about lead. So 2017 is the year that will be our next round of compliance sampling. We do it once every 3 years to satisfy the regulation. On top of all of
That's the EPA
lead and copper mm-hmm. rule. On top of all the stuff that we do, we will continue to do this compliance. And internally, we were thinking that maybe it's a really good time just to review our water quality parameters. I mean, we sample all the time, but to seriously, critically evaluate, is our corrosion control system optimized? Is it optimized? Can we optimize it more? Let's try it now. So when the task force started talking about the community not necessarily being confident of Milwaukee Water Works, my first response was I was mildly irritated by that, because we are a fabulous water utility. We are committed. We are dedicated. We have great staff. We are on the forefront of all sorts of kinds of things. We get awards. And to be recognized as a leader at the national level and not at the local level was just a little perplexing to me. But clearly, we have nothing to hide. So if someone wants to do an audit, bring it on. You know, just bring it on. We're here. We're ready. Tell me what you want to know, or tell my successor what you want to know, and we'll bring up your level of confidence, I'm certain.
Today is Carrie Lewis's last day as superintendent of the Milwaukee Water Works. She moves to Portland, Maine to head that city's water district. Lewis spoke with Susan Bentz.